6'6" above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before.
And welcome to this Monday edition of A Public Affair. I'm your host, John Quinlan. On a very cold day when we are so happy to have both our guests joining us in studio and those of you out there perhaps that are have a little bit of a different routine, we have, I think, what will be a show with some warm and comforting news for a change in the area of media reform and community media. We're going to be talking throughout the hour about a series of developments with cable access television in Wisconsin and focus on some of the things that are happening a bit more locally as well. Part of that that we'll get to a little bit later in the hour is a discussion of a new piece of federal legislation that's being championed by U.S. Senators Tammy Baldwin and her colleague Ed Markey from Massachusetts. It's called the Community Access Preservation Act, or CAP. Again, it's legislation to ensure public access to local television programming. But there's a larger history here. As I mentioned, I think something that's distressed a lot of folks is in perhaps the last half dozen or so years, a bunch of developments that have happened in terms of changes in state legislation, whereas previously it was part of this special relationship that cable companies had to their communities, often being virtual monopolies or something close to that, that meant that they were obligated to provide a subsidy to access to citizens, to community television. And much of that went the other way as industry people both here in Wisconsin and across the nation were able to pass state legislation that removed that requirement and then left leaving a lot of stations in the lurch. I think what we're going to be talking about today is some of the more innovative responses and approaches that have arisen out of that, some exciting developments here in Wisconsin, both in terms of local channel WYRU in Madison and also statewide developments. And to help us with that conversation, I have in studio Mary Cardona, and she is the executive director of Mary, pardon me, the name has changed, is that right?
Yeah, we're now called the Wisconsin Community Media. We used to be the Wisconsin Association of PEG Channels.
Oh, you just want to make sure I got that right? Yeah. So Mary will be joining us for the full hour. We're also joined by Luciano Matherone and Barbara Vetter, who will be talking about the situation with WYU. But first we wanted to start with a perspective from State Representative Gary Hebel. Gary is a Democrat from Sun Prairie, and he has a long history of working on the legislation at the state level. Gary, welcome to A Public Affair.
Thank you, John. Glad to be here.
Glad you could be here. Well, as Mary Cardona was explaining to me, you have a long history of championing both proactive legislation, also trying to react to some of the efforts by industry to curb back the obligation of cable companies to help provide that public access. I guess some of this goes back to legislation in about 2007. Could you just kind of walk us through what some of the history has been and your involvement? I know you've done this in partnership in part with your colleague Kathleen Vinehode over on the Senate side.
That's true, and she's been a great companion along the way, as well as Mary Cardona. We've spent many hours together trying to work on solutions for Act 42, which was a bill passed in 2007. As a result of that act, many cable stations, many public access stations in the state were severely affected in a negative way in terms of funding and the ability to continue to carry out the local access ability within a community. We fought tooth and nail with the cable providers, and unfortunately they had tons of money, which is not unfamiliar these days, and a great deal of support with that money across the legislative bodies. And despite our best efforts to try to prevent what occurred, the cable industry were basically able to take away the funding to a great degree of local access. As you know, local access is so important to a community, and having that access, having folks in a community experience a town hall exposure to what's going on in their community is very vital for democracy, very vital for the information gathering and releasing for the community members so that they are well informed of what's going on in that community. As a result of Act 42, much of that funding and much of the ability to provide that access to the public has been greatly curtailed, and in some instances has actually been eliminated. For example, in West Allis, they've discontinued local access, Wausau as well, and other communities around the state are feeling the severe cuts, and as a result, municipalities have had to cut back on the ability of local access. And it's a real tragedy for democracy, for people being educated on what's going on in their community.
Yeah, it's distressing to hear about situations like West Allis. Wausau is a place that I grew up, and that's my first access to, I think, being on TV at age 8 happened there. And so,
oh, my God.
It's been a part of our lives, you know, for so many of us, that extra aspect of access to community. Hey, could you relate this a little bit? Is this, in fact, you know, something that isn't happening just in isolation in Wisconsin? I mean, it's I don't know if it's related to the ALEC legislative agenda that a national groups are enacting legislation and then copying it in legislatures across the country. Is there something that's national that is driving some of this?
No question, it's a national effort, and it's being undertaken by the cable companies in general, and it's part of that deregulation where we say that if we allow the cable companies to interact, the competition will require that they provide the necessary means for public access to occur. Nothing could be further from the truth, and there is a need for government in circumstances like this where you have cable companies which have such a strong monopoly. If they're not required or mandated to provide the funding for local access, they're not going to do it. A corporation is not in the business of, they don't have a conscience or a morality. A corporation is in the business of making money, and they're going to cut wherever they can, and they found some low-hanging fruit when it comes to local access. The amazing thing about funding is that it really does not cost the taxpayers a dollar. It doesn't cost the consumers of local access any money. Really, taking a small percentage of what the cable companies charge and putting that into local access programming.
And it sounds like it's very much against the public will. I think, you know, most folks recognize, are very upset with some of the other ways the cable companies act out, whether it's rate structures or programming decisions. Not always institutions that are especially responsive to local needs, and yet they really do have that virtual monopoly on access to the airwaves.
And they really do, and if they're not controlled by rules and regulations, they're not going to cater to what is necessary for the public needs. They're going to take whatever action they can to protect themselves and risk what we've gained for so many years. I've been involved with Sun Prairie Cable Access for in excess of 35 years, and it is just amazing the benefits that provides to a community in terms of educating the populace about what's going on, about local government, about the school board. All those issues are in the forefront, and people who can't get to the meetings themselves have the ability to be educated on a first-hand basis on knowing what's going on in the community and how to react and how to make that community a better place to live.
We'll have a chance to explore this in greater depth throughout the hour, but I know that you issued a recent press release that was supportive of these federal efforts. Can you just remark briefly on what their significance might be to us here in Wisconsin?
Oh, I am so, so excited about seeing this light at the end of the tunnel as a result of our Senator Tammy Baldwin undertaking this wonderful Community Access Preservation Act. And what it does is takes us to a time really prior to Act 42, when the funding was appropriate for the needs of local access and taking away the restrictions and the unfair advantage that cable companies have taken as a result of Act 42. This is model legislation that will really help local access and public access in general.
Luciano, who's one of my guests here, I think was just remarking too that it is great that our senator too is remembering an issue that she probably learned about more in the local context of the second CD and realized the passion there and hasn't forgotten that now that she's a Senate U.S. senator.
That's for sure, and we're very, very fortunate to have her as a senator. And this is the type of legislation that's really crucial to protecting local access.
Gary Hebel, thank you so much for joining us today. I know time, we've got to cut you a little bit short here because of your time constraints, but we really appreciate you giving us these perspectives. Before we leave, any prospects for future legislation that you might be involved with at the statewide level?
Well, we're continuing to pursue all options available to us, but as you know, the current makeup of the legislature does not allow us to really introduce legislation that's beneficial to cable access. We are doing everything we can to stop the bleeding and to try to provide really the necessary means to improve the quality of life in the state of Wisconsin, and cable access is clearly one of those that we'd love to improve, but the current makeup of the legislature does not allow that. Understand, John, we're not giving up the fight, but you look at the numbers, and we're fighting like dogs to try to get our message out, and we'll continue to do that.
Even with those realities, I would imagine you can attest to the fact that it's very important for your colleagues to hear from their constituents about this. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. That's the best source for us to get change in legislature is for constituents, so that the legislators know how they feel.
All right. Well, once again, thank you to Representative Gary Hebel, who's joined us on the phone today. He's a Democrat from Sun Prairie who has been a longtime champion of community television. And once again, thanks for being on A Public Affair today.
You bet, John. Thank you. Happy New Year to you and your panel.
Oh, thank you. You too. And once again, for those of you just joining us, this is A Public Affair. I'm your host, John Quinlan, and we're going to be talking about the future of cable access television, community-based television in Wisconsin. And we have two guests in studio. Mary Cardona is the executive director. Sorry, I forgot to write it down again. Your new name. But this would be a good way for us to get that new name out there.
Sure. It's Wisconsin Community Media. And we actually just created a brand new website, went live on Friday. So we're very excited about that. So if the listeners want to check it out, it's at www.wisconsincommunitymedia.com. But we would love to have visitors to see what we're up to.
So Wisconsin spelled out, is that right? All
completely,
the words spelled out.
Yep, all the words spelled out.
WisconsinCommunityMedia.com, and we'll bring that web address back to you in just a moment. Also joining us from the perspective of WYOU Community Television Institution, I think it's been around since at least the 70s, hasn't it, Luciano?
That's what I believe, yes, 70-something, early 70. Yeah.
Okay, and we have Luciano Matherone, local videographer and board member, someone who's been involved with these issues. And also joining us by phone is Barbara Vetter, Luciano's partner both in organizing and in other realms of life, and someone who has also been very active in this fight. Barbara, are you there?
Yes, I am. So, and I don't know if I'm talking at the right time because the radio is so crazy.
Okay, are you able to turn that down so that isn't confusing?
Oh,
because you should be able to hear us.
I turn it down. Okay, I'll do that right now.
All right, we'll be back to you in just a second, Barbara. That's okay.
Yeah.
So Mary, we touched on one of the kind of, we'll work our way down from maybe the federal level to the local level, touched on this new act that, again, is being proposed by our Senator Tammy Baldwin and Ed Markey, the U.S. Senator from Massachusetts. It's called the Community Access Preservation Act. And while Gary Hebel gave us a little bit of the background, could you fill out a little bit more what the significance of this act is?
Well, it's hugely important. There were about a dozen states that passed state franchise legislation in the mid-2000s. And basically what happened was those states said, our local municipalities can no longer have access to the federal cable television laws, which allowed local municipalities to request a peg fee from cable companies. And what this new legislation does is it says, you know, state governments, this law was directed toward local municipalities. We want them to have this right to decide whether or not they want to support PEG access stations or public education and government access stations. And so this act then says, if you passed a state franchise law in the 2000s, after 2005, you can, if you want to, as a municipality, you may again assess what you assessed before the state franchise legislation passed, or you can request up to 2% of video gross revenues from the cable company, or you can ask for an average amount that you received in support for your station over the course of your franchise term. So that one really kicks in for places like Milwaukee that negotiated a franchise contract where the station got a lump sum at the beginning of a 15-year term. So what you do then is you average that amount over the 15 years, and then you figure out how much you would get on a per-year basis. So that's the primary thing for us, because basically we don't have a PEG fee now. There is no dedicated funding for these stations. And what has happened since 2007 is that cities have decided that this is important, and they are funding these stations largely. You know, we have had some huge losses.
Yeah.
Gary mentioned one, West Dallas Community Media. But cities know that this is important to their communities, and they have been supporting them. But the problem is when municipalities have budget problems and they're deciding between funding the fire department or funding community television, we tend to lose.
Yeah.
We're not considered an essential service. So what this new bill will do is it will once again restore dedicated funding for community television, and that is really, really important.
I want to just make sure, again, for folks who maybe aren't familiar with this issue, the acronym you used, PEG. Could you dissect that for us?
I've been doing this for many years, and I keep getting reminded. Actually, the new lingo is community media centers,
yep,
because we do more than cable TV these days. Most of our stations are doing websites, and they have video on demand and video streaming like WYOU does. But PEG stands for Public Education and Government Access Television, PEG. And it was created in the 1970s when the FCC first required cable operators to provide a community and a local dimension to their cable systems.
In just to put it in a very local context in terms of Madison, the public part was WYOU. Mm-hmm. Education meant the Madison schools had a station, and government means the city channel.
Right.
So often those are three separate entities. Although in some places I know, like I think Oshkosh, haven't they sort of combined efforts? That's been one of the ways of reacting to some of this.
Larger cities tend to have more than one channel.
Yeah.
Many of the smaller cities just have one, and they provide all three types of services, or sometimes two. But Oshkosh in particular, they do have two separate channels.
Okay.
But they have one institution, you might say, that is all housed in the city government. And then they have a friends group that helps raise money and supports public access television there.
Okay. Well, Luciana, let's bring this down to the very local level, WYOU. Folks know that since this legislation was passed, funding for WYOU from the city, to the city's credit, it wasn't just wholly cut. There was a scaling back of it, and yet this put you all in a position to try to make up what was about $150,000 a year.
$150,000, yeah.
And that kind of continued through the last several years. You made valiant efforts to try to raise money in other ways, and yet it looked like things were pretty bleak as recently as a few months ago. What's changed in terms of that picture?
Well, few things change, and I will answer that question. What I want to point out, and just what Mary said, about the different philosophy or possibility that the different channels have. Of course, the education will deal with schools, stuff who happen in the school, maybe the school board, the game, and theater or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
When the public, the government channel will focus more like on, here in Madison you have the county board who is put on the TV, and the city council, government function. Usually the public is much, much more free and open to the creativity of the people.
You know, I can just interject from personal experience. I mean, so you guys, WRU, I think in my context at the United Nations Association, you'd come and Rossato, one of your volunteers, will be there. He'll cover every single program that we have. City Channel sometimes is very nice. They find different programs they think are of wider interest, and they'll be there, or they'll come to our annual dinner. But they point out that that's probably about 16th or 17th on their list of priorities. They really need to cover local governments and government committees and a whole lot of other things before we get down to that community base. So it's definitely a place, it sounds like, for both types of television.
There is. And like Mary pointed out, in a lot of little community, they group the three together. And usually there is a much, much more government function would happen,
right?
Because
I would like to agree with that. I think it's really important to point out that since 2007, the type of access that has really suffered is this public access type, where anybody can get on the channel and create a program for themselves, because the governments that fund this feel very comfortable in funding government access,
right,
or even educational access sometimes, you know, the school districts like that. But it's the public dimension that has really suffered the most and has lost the most funding.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And also one thing that is subtle but would change is, Gary did mention before, there was no tax money involved, because the money was coming from, well, now guess what? The city who want to keep the government channel, they do have to fund it to tax money. Or some type of the fee that they still get from the...
Yeah.
It's
We should probably clarify that. There are two different fees that we're getting from the cable companies. Mm-hmm. One is called a franchise fee, and that's a 5% franchise fee, and that did not disappear after 2007. But that money is unrestricted. Cities can use that money for anything, and some communities use it for community television, and others do not. What we lost was the dedicated, what's called a PEG fee, the dedicated PEG fee that could only be used for community television.
Good. So, yeah, I wanted to clarify that aspect of things. But so your question, what changed for WYUU? What happened is that we had a meeting with the mayor, Paul Soglin, who suggested that we contact the library director of the new library.
We have a new director in this past year, Greg Michaels. Yes,
Greg Michaels. And so we did. And of this, what happened, Greg Michaels said that he didn't have any problem hosting WYOU in the library, in the new library, for free. And when we mean hosting, it's not like WYOU, we move everything to the library. We still have an office where we used to be on Williamson Street at the Social Justice Center. But what we move is all the cable casting equipment, the program and stuff, in the media server of the library. And so our signal originate from the library, and we ended up having a partnership with the Media Lab. They started the Media Lab in the library, and so with that partnership, we are able to actually explore even stuff we were not exploring before, like stop-motion video, video game, all kind of very interesting stuff that the Media Lab proposed.
You accessed all kinds of state-of-the-art equipment that you didn't in the previous
year. Exactly. Yeah. So this gives WYOU a very, and we are also piggybacking in some of the city equipment. So our transmission of the signal now is taking care both by the library and the city. So we feel we have set up a very strong base position where we can now grow. Explore, and it's very exciting. And we cut down. Now we have a little office at the Social Justice Center. So, you know, we cut down the rent from $1,500 a month to $150 a month.
Oh, wow.
And since I'm mentioning that, I want to to make a plug for the Social Justice Center, because it's an incredible, incredible place. They have been very, very nice and very understanding with us. And they need to rent the place that we leave vacant now. So there is like a, I won't be totally clear, but probably in the 1500 square foot of office space with a front window, you know,
right
across from the, the food, the co-op.
Weary Traveler, yeah, and the
Weary Traveler and the co-op. I mean, in a very nice situation.
Right.
So anybody, organization who needs some place, please contact the Social Justice Center.
Just briefly on that history, the Social Justice Center, I think now maybe about 12 to 15 years old, but it was one of the first places where nonprofits were encouraged to actually purchase and take ownership of their own space, and then an incubator space down below for other nonprofits.
Exactly. So, you know, we feel the mission of all these things, the Social Justice Center, the library, us, we are on the same boat, you know. we're struggling to kind of keep democracy alive. You know?
I mean, when I heard about this, there were so many commonsensical, things that just seemed to make sense of this partnership. You mentioned it is centered around the new downtown library, that media lab, but it also means that your programmers, if they have a DVD, they want something to go on the air, they go to a branch anywhere throughout the city and turn that in. So you're using that infrastructure that's already there to open up to the community.
I'm not sure if that aspect you mentioned is in
place.
Maybe
that hasn't.
But
okay.
It might be. I don't know for sure. But definitely they can go to the people have gone to the center library and give their DVD. Everything is operational there and work very well. And we're having a very great relationship with the people.
Mary, not to put you on the spot, but is this something that that other places have thought about, or do you, at least in your experience, is it something that maybe a model that could be applied in other places effectively?
Well, Janesville Public Access is housed in the Janesville Public Library.
Yeah.
There's a really famous one. I mean, I think of it as famous. Fort Wayne Public Library in Indiana is a huge access center. It's based out of the library. The library has a really strong tradition of free speech, and it's a very it's a very easy collaboration because both have very similar missions to serve people, to offer them options for expression.
Yeah.
Sun Prairie is in the library too.
That's right.
Oh, that's right.
Of course.
Okay.
Sun Prairie.
And I want to mention, because Gary was talking before and we're so thankful about the work he's been doing, but I want to say that the people from the community station in Sun Prairie, Cameron, who is a director, did reach out to WYOU, maybe like a month or two before we ended up doing the switch to the library. And he was reaching out to say, any way we can help you, we will do it. So we went to their place, and that's what gave us the idea of say, hey, we can decentralize. We don't have to have everything in the same place. You know, so that gave us a spark. It was Sun Prairie who gave us a spark to actually look for more than collaboration with the Central Library. Our first idea was maybe collaborating, but certainly it became a much more strong partnership. And I have to be thankful to Cameron and the people and the staff over there at the library. They've been very nice at the community station in Sun Prairie. They have been very nice with us.
As you've both been talking, it strikes me this is really part of a larger movement, again, for giving access to people, giving citizen access to the airwaves, however you wanted to phrase it, maybe not airwaves in this case, but to be able to produce their own media. It's part of a national movement. I've been to most of the national media reform conferences that started here about 12 years ago. Yeah. A lot of enthusiasm, a lot of collaboration, on a nationwide basis. But, of course, here in Wisconsin, it's epitomized by the work of Wisconsin Community Media.
Well, video is really hot right now.
Yeah.
I think, I'm really proud of the tradition we have as community television providers, that, you know, we have been putting the tools of media and the training to use that in the hands of people for a very long time, for about 40-plus years. And all of those tools and all of that training is transferable not only, you know, it's not only useful for cable, but it's also transferable to the web. And so, you know, we see ourselves as production centers that can provide assistance to people who want who have something to say, whether it's over cable, whether it's over the web.
Yeah.
We're open to all of that.
And just lots of new possibilities opening up with these new partnerships and other mm-hmm. things, bringing in folks who maybe haven't been part of that.
Exactly. I mean, I was amused to find that YouTube opened up two big production facilities, one on the West Coast, and I think they're planning one on the East Coast and maybe one in Chicago, so that people can have a place to go to produce their YouTube videos. And I was thinking, oh, my God, they're recreating community yeah. television. And we have it here. We have it in all of these little towns all across the state. You would be surprised how much training goes on across the state. There's probably over 200 channels in the state. There's probably 80 channels that are very active. And really, in every town, if you are interested in doing access television, there's probably an opportunity for you. And one of the great things about our new website is that people will be able to go to our website, put in their zip code, and find out where their nearest access centers are.
Yeah. Are there also possibilities of expanding and being able to offer samples of some of the programs produced through links and other connections?
So I'm really excited about that. So all of our stations will be posting links to their video on demand and to their streaming video, but we're also planning to feature videos directly on the site. So watch for that. Like I said, we just went live on Friday, so it's something that we will be developing over time. We're also hoping that producers get more involved with our organization, because we'd like to see a producers network spring up statewide, so that anybody who's doing community television can, you know, talk to each other and get tips and maybe collaborate. And I think it's just a really exciting thing to be able to do, because this new site is based on association management software. So
yeah.
It houses a database and it allows people to actually interact with each other in a Facebook style and with listservs. And it's just terrific. So I'm really excited about the interactive possibilities of the site.
Yeah, I'm sure it's inherent. I mean, social media, you look at job descriptions or notices that are out there. Proficiency and understanding of the possibilities of that is so important. Again, involvement with you and your association is one of the ways to gain more about that.
And one of the things that's always been a struggle for community television is promotion and advertising. And with the way the cable companies have always attempted to sort of bury us in various ways, it's always been kind of a struggle. But so with this website, again, we're hoping that we can put our promotion forward more.
Yep.
And if people want to know what's on a channel in Eau Claire or what's on a channel in Oshkosh or Janesville or Milwaukee, they can come to this site and find out what's going on.
All right. For those of you just joining us, just want to reset the show for you. If you're just joining midstream, our discussion is about community access to television. And we're speaking about it from a bunch of different perspectives, including pending federal legislation that U.S. Senators Tammy Baldwin and Edward Markey are proposing to increase public access to local television programming, give local municipalities an option once again to require cable companies a subsidy of some of that programming. We're also speaking on the state level with Mary Cardona, the executive director of Wisconsin Community Media, and ways that people across the state involved with community television are collaborating, working with each other to build possibilities. And then also speaking with Luciano Matheron here in the studio, someone who's been involved both as a videographer and in helping to build WYRU. And Barbara Vetter is joining us on the phone. Barbara, I apologize for taking so long to bring you into the conversation. But
that's fine.
I know that one of the things that really drives you in all of this, you know, that's resonant with your larger activism is the notion of giving voices to the voiceless, you know, to bringing in folks from various movements and experiences and backgrounds that often don't really have a chance to produce their own programming, get their own voices out there. Could you reflect a little bit about you know, how you feel about some of these positive developments and that potential to get those voices out there?
Well, I think it's even more important than ever that people can have access to the airwaves and be able to tell their stories, be able to say what's going on in their lives, be able to have do it, as you said, giving them a voice where they wouldn't normally otherwise have their voice being heard. And I think it's incredibly important to our democracy, to the health of our community, that anyone, virtually anyone, can be part of putting a program together and being able to be heard by others and share ideas and opinions, points of view, perspectives, because that's what makes us even more rich as a community, is to get to better understand each other and better understand the issues that are going on. And that could be anything from political to artistic and this is the way that it can be done, and I think that WIU has served that role in the past, and it's so incredible that we now have another second chance to be able to continue to do that.
When very concerned about consolidation of media, lack of voices as a result, is this something that has potential to be able to counter some of those more negative forces? And I guess also just reflecting on some of the legislation that's out there, is that something that you're supportive of, you can get behind? Hey, Barbara, I don't want to pigeonhole you in terms of a specific area as someone who's just so broadly involved and sees the interconnections between different social justice struggles, but I know that you probably have some special perspectives that come in terms of the disability rights movement, and I know speaking to other friends involved with those movements, sometimes things like websites and some of the new social media, it's a double-edged sword because as often they're not necessarily designed with an understanding of how someone who is blind or deaf or has a physical challenge in terms of accessing some of these services, how some very simple accommodations can be made to be able to open up, again, this world to them. But is that something that also you think holds some great potential here?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think we've seen progress. When I first got on the Madison City Council, people were very, very negative. They were in denial. They didn't see that a person with quadriplegia, whose spinal cord injuries and paralyzed using a power chair, could ever be involved like that in government. Well, we proved them wrong,
Yeah.
And I was elected by the people, and that way I was able to, on that level, be able to provide voices for people who hadn't been heard in government. But it's also true in with public and public access. And I know when I used to do volunteer work at WORT also, and I was able to bring in some perspectives and work together with other people that hadn't been done prior to that either. There's always a way to be able to accommodate situations, and if there's a will, it's going to happen, and it just has to be, the path has to be opened and not have a door shut in your face, and there's a way to be able to connect with other people and exchange ideas and knowledge about what people's experiences are. And I think that's the only way that people can really truly communicate with each other and try to understand each other, is through that kind of very direct communication.
Just as someone one step removed but who's followed your career, is a test to, I think, a lot of folks who thought they knew better, but you really opened a lot of eyes, I think, in terms of what the possibilities were in terms of local government. And it's great that there's this resonance also now with community media. So.
Absolutely. And this broadens it so much more because, anyone, no matter if you're elderly or if you're a child, if you're totally able-bodied or disabled, or if what color, creed, or regard, we have such a diversity in our community, and everybody's voices should be open to other people's ears and be able to communicate with each other and be able to really tell stories and educate one another and share ideas. So, I mean, it's open to anyone, virtually anyone, and Madison is becoming more and more diverse, and I think, you know, we definitely need to be able to respond to that and be able to communicate
in
these ways.
You touch very eloquently on this, but of course, both in terms of addressing the racial disparities that unfortunately are quite acute here in Madison, and embracing cultural difference. This sounds like just a fantastic role for these media to play. We do have a caller on the line. Caller, your comment, your question, please.
Yes, hi. This is Caroline Warner.
Hi, Caroline.
Hi. I'm the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender senior advocate who works with Outreach, the community center here in Madison. And I want to thank WYOU for being available to help Outreach do some educating with regard to transgender senior issues and their health situations. You know, Outreach is a very low, nonprofit organization, and we didn't have a lot of money to do televising of any educational programming. And so WYOU was very kind to step forward and say that they would be willing to do like a half-hour program for us on this issue, and we could bring in a physician who works with transgender individuals and a transgender senior to talk about the needs of the transgender population. So I want just to thank WYOU for that. And also, I'm very conscious how involved the WYOU has always been with the union activities. And I think that that's so important right now when, you know, there's so much being done at the state and even federal level to reduce the impact of unions, to provide living wages, humane working conditions, et cetera, for their workers. And so I think it's really important to put that educational piece out there so that the public can understand the conditions that the workers work with and understand the struggles they have keeping their families together with their salaries, et cetera. So I think it's really important to be able to have a visual of how life really goes on where a lot of people maybe don't see the situation.
Caroline, thank you. Those are two great examples. And incidentally, for our listeners, we'll preview that we hope to have Caroline in before too long talking about her important work with LGBT seniors, which is really some groundbreaking stuff. But you know, those, you know, Barbara, you know, those are just two great examples, both in the sense of, you know, of course, the mainstream media is not exactly overflowing with the experiences of transgender seniors or you know, groups that again, that very much need a voice but don't have it. And then, you know, as Bart Caroline's invoking, too, workers' rights. And, of course, the role of social media in covering the Capitol protests, not just in Madison, but statewide, was just so important.
And WYU was, you know, back just a couple of years ago when we had the Wisconsin Uprising, I mean, Luciano was there every day. There were other people who were involved in WYU or weren't before but became involved who brought in materials that we could actually put on the air and that people could watch and listen to. And we put together, we've got an archive going on of photography and video and other documentation of that very important part of our history in Wisconsin, that, you know, there were thousands of people down at the Capitol with their signs and their costumes and everything, and it was very much revolving around labor rights, but other issues as well. But we have this incredible resource at WYU that has an archive of that period of time and what people, what was going on during that time. So, you know, that's just another example of how we can utilize community public access and be able to provide information to the public that they wouldn't otherwise have.
As we come down to our last 7 or 8 minutes, just one more opportunity if you'd like to participate in our conversation. And we do have another caller on the line, I believe. Your comment or question, please.
I wonder if Luciano could comment on whether or not all this openness will lead the population to an understanding of just how corrupt and feckless our governments are.
All right, we'll put that past him. What do you think, Luciano?
Well, I do hope we will be part of that, you know. I mean, we do what we can to make people know what's going on, you know.
And to flip the question around, of course, is to make governments more accountable, right, more democratic.
Yeah.
What happened at the Capitol was a democracy movement. So,
yeah, yeah.
So as understandably cynical as our caller is, of course, we hope there will be a positive result, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, you know.
You can fight back.
That's right. That's right.
We all do our part.
Actually, just one thing I wanted to come back to briefly with Mary. This phenomenon of capturing history, whether it's oral histories or being able to create an archive where a community and its history are captured. Is that something that's also happening around the state?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
But I would say that it always requires money, and I really wanted to get this in.
Okay.
It's very, very important for people to contact Senator Ron Johnson.
Absolutely.
Right now, this bill is in the Senate only. It doesn't have a House version yet. But Senator Ron Johnson, we have done outreach to Senator Johnson. There is a real possibility that Senator Johnson will support this, but he needs to hear from constituents. So really, it's very, very important for people to contact their legislators, because they truly do not move unless they really believe their constituents are behind them. So you have to have their back, and you have to call them, you have to write to them, and let them know that this is important to you.
And I, you know, I think,
so important.
Yeah, I think it's important. You know, of course, we're speaking on a progressive radio station from that perspective. But one of the beautiful things about community access television is the free exchange of ideas across spectrums and from different places.
I think it's really important to point out, it's not a right or a left issue here. It allows people on the local level to speak whatever their political persuasion is, and people have to let their legislators know that this is important to them.
Let me also
plug American Community Television. They're the national group that's pushing the CAP Act. American Community Television, Google them and give them money to help lobby, because it takes money to lobby.
Yeah,
I think it's so important what you brought up, Mary, about contacting Ron Johnson. Just on the flip side of that, of course, our other senator is Tammy Baldwin, who's introducing this act and this bill in Congress, and we're hoping that she can join us just to give us a little slip it in. We're going to have a big, huge party celebration for WIOU at the public library on the third floor on the end of the month on January 29th from 5:30 to 8:30, and food and drink, and we're just going to make it a big blown-up party, because just we survived it. We are overcoming it, and we have this incredible Congresswoman, Tammy Baldwin, and we're hoping that she or at least one of her representatives can be there to speak to this very, very important act that we have to urge and force Ron Johnson to support as well.
And of course, and I misspeak this way too, but of course our Senator, Tammy Baldwin, now.
And don't forget Mark Pocan. You can encourage Mark to support this and maybe introduce it in the House.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Actually, I wanted to make sure before we go that we have ways that folks can get in touch with you all in terms of finding out more. Luciano, in terms of WYOU?
Okay, WYOU, you can connect at info@wyou.org or 258-9644. There is a few things, if I can squeeze in.
Please, go ahead.
Barbara mentioned the celebration on the 29th. That's very important for us and for the community. Probably the mayor will say something there. And also, this is good, what's happening. We created a good base. But now, you know, we have to use that tool, and the community has to jump in. We really need to expand the board member of WYOU. We will have a vote on February. We need people to register, to make a application for board member by the end of the month of January. And we're trying to get more skill, you know, not just because we have a lot of producers in the board member, but we need people who have some lawyer expertise, some accountant expertise, some management expertise. So, you know, people who have time also, some time to give, but please.
And interest is, of course.
That's right.
So that's kind of a very important thing to volunteer, not just to produce video, which is great, and we need that too, but to make the station and that partnership function.
All right. Well, once again, just repeat, info@wyou.org.
Or 258-9644.
And, of course, a great new website that you all want to bookmark and call on as a resource in terms of examples of progressive media, examples of community media from all perspectives that are out there, wisconsincommunitymedia.com. Is the website. Just Mary, before we go, just real. So we were talking about these positive potential developments if a federal bill is passed, other things. Is there a chance? The biggest concern is that we've lost something that can't be restored. Is there a chance that places like West Allis, Wausau, some of the services might be restored eventually?
Well, I think one of the lessons we've learned from 2007 is that, as usual, after weathering many, many storms over the last 40 years, community television is so darn cool. We all want it to last, and somehow it always does. WYOU is an example. In Wausau, just in the last year, they've rededicated $15,000 a year. It's not a lot, but they decided they want it back. They want it. They want more. So they've risen again. I don't know about West Allis. That's a tough one. But we are all surviving, but we want to thrive. And that's what this dedicated funding will give us, a source of funding that will allow us to actually thrive.
Again, I want to thank both your guests, Mary Cardona, who's the executive director of Wisconsin Community Media, Luciana Matheron, and Barbara Vetter from WYRU.